Good evening, everybody. Hello. I don't have any new information for you tonight. We have the same handout we had last week, so if you didn't get one or you are, it's your first week this week, it tells you where to get the readings and things like that. We added ways to give on the back, and we didn't add help out with setting up and taking down and things like that. A lot of people are already doing that, but if you ever need, you know, instruction on how to help put up the water bowls, you could come at 6:20 or maybe even 6:30, and I'd be happy to go over that with you, and then you can kind of do that when you come. You can just walk up there at the end, and we'll help you with how to take them down. There's a lot of little things like putting out signs and things like that. That's always great, the more people that know that. And then you know more about the center, and we're all better friends, and that's all good. And then at the back of the class on your way out is this completion card. So if you want to be keeping track of your reading and things like that, you can do that. And if you do all the reading, you can get a certificate at the end. There's a grounds day coming up. We think it, what'd you say, Tim, the 16th? 18th. Check your website and things like that. Tim's going to be here. he knows how to landscape. So, and always look for other announcements and things like that of ways to just kind of jump in and help. And, yeah, if you'd like to get your hands in the dirt, that's a good one.
Any questions?
Okay. I don't have anything new to say today either, but I'll come up with something. So welcome. How many people is this? I can't speak today. That hour that I lost is just killing me. So I'm amazed anybody's here today. We will take it easy on ourselves. Raise your hand if this is your first time, or at least first time in this class, if you weren't here last week. So I know, okay, it's fine, because I just need to know what I need to, like, kind of say again. That pillow is too high, so I'm going to switch it out. So my name is Stephanie, or Steep. Steep is a nickname that Geshe-la gave me a long time ago. I'll tell you more about sometime. And this is the karma module on the Discovering Buddhism, in the Discovering Buddhism class. And we're going to do a little review anyway, so don't worry if you missed the one last week. So we always start by doing something that's perfectly in line with studying karma, which is setting our intention. And so we're going to take a couple of minutes to do that before we even read the prayer in the prayer book, which is on what page again?
34.
Okay, right around 34. 34 is Four Immeasurables. Before we do that, though, just think for yourself what your intention of coming here tonight is. You know, to just to learn some more information, and all of the, anything, whatever it is, it's fine. I just want to prompt you to remember what your own motivation is, just to get some more information, to reduce some of the stress in your life, to make friends who have similar interests. Whatever your motivation is, think for a minute about it, and think what the effect will be if you reach this goal. If you do get some more information, reduce the stress in your life, become closer to other people, whatever your goal is, what will it be like? And try to imagine the ripple effect of achieving that. How many people around you will benefit from your calmer mind, your wiser mind? And that's one way to start with your, start kind of increasing your intention to include as many people as possible. So like that, we're going to, with that in mind, we're going to read the Four Immeasurables together. And last time, did it help to pause between sentences to think a little bit about what we're saying? Okay, so let's do that again. I tell you what. Why doesn't this side of the room say the first immeasurable, and we'll just listen and concentrate. And then the middle of this big group, we'll say the second one, I'll be the choreographer, so I'll direct you. There'll be one, and then we'll take a pause, and then two. And then this section right here, you're number three. You're the third immeasurable, and you're the fourth immeasurable. Okay? All right, and on four. One. Okay, the first one. Okay, and two. Three. And four.
They are also being divided by equanimity, free from attachment for friends, and maybe friends.
Wonderful, you know, because you can say these things and it just becomes so rote, you don't really take time to think about it. And so even in your own practice, any way to kind of shift things up that makes it stand out for you again and brings your awareness to it is really helpful. And so with this intention in mind, then we're going to do just a 5-minute meditation, focus meditation, bringing all of your awareness to your breath. I'll walk you through it. But it's just to let your mind settle, as Geshe was saying the other night in class. You know, it's like when you shake up a jar full of water and sand, and then you just let all the sand settle down. That's the point right now. That's the point, is to just let everything from today and all your fatigue and worry and thoughts of work or family or whatever just kind of settle to the bottom so that your mind is clearer. And think like this too. If you know your mind is going to wander, and if you can see your mind as kind of an ocean, and sometimes you're able to catch those thoughts as they're rising up, just like a wave, and if you bring all your attention to like, oh, there's a thought, it'll kind of settle right back down. And the point is to try to expand the space between those thoughts. Just like when you breathe, there's a point between your exhale and your inhale that's just calm. So the point of this meditation is to try to expand that pause between thoughts, if you're able to. You can keep working on it at home. But you can see a thought, then you're kind of like excited, like, oh, I see it coming, so now I don't really have to follow it. And let it just fall back into the ocean and rest for a moment, and then another one will come up. And that's how counting our breaths is often important in tying our mind to something. So check your posture, again, making sure that your back is straight. And even if you're sitting in a chair, you know, make sure your feet are flat on the floor. At home, you can put a cushion under your butt, even on a chair, so that your hips are a little higher than your knees, which will help the back straighten without arching the back. You don't want a break in the spine. You want the spine to be as straight as possible. And to help that, you tuck the chin a little bit so that your head, which is resting on the top of your spine, the spine is all the way straight up to the very top. You know, the crown of your head, which is the back, is the highest point. And if you'd like to have the hand mudra of meditating, then you put your left hand right below your navel, your right hand gently on top, your thumbs just gently touching. And that's all below your navel. And your arms away from your body so that you're breathing again, which is also very important, is as deep and smooth as possible. And place your tongue just gently behind your front teeth. And your jaw is relaxed. Your eyes closed or just gently open to keep yourself alert. And then you want to bring all of your awareness to the sensation of breathing. Either the feeling of air coming in and out of your nostrils or your abdomen moving up and down with the breath. And then you start your count. One for inhalation, one exhalation, and so on up to 5 or 10, whatever works best for you. And I will ring the little bell in about 5 minutes. And if you have to move, that's fine. If you hear somebody else moving or coughing, it's all grist for the mill, just something to be aware of what your mind is doing with it. And as you come out of your meditation, refresh your intention again. And you can get used to trying to refresh your intention throughout the day. But now just refreshing it for why you're here, why your intention for listening and sharing and talking and asking questions and learning more about karma. So there were a couple of rules of thumb I went over and had on the board last time about this topic, because it can be kind of intense, you know, this whole, especially in the Western way that we sometimes think about karma. We either think about it really intensely or really silly. Like, I think I was shopping with Geshwin Walmart or something, and there were these karma beans. It's like, what is karma beans? Somebody's selling these little jelly beans, and I didn't know how to answer him, but so it's kind of one extreme or the other. But a couple of rules of thumb I had there to help make sure that we don't veer off into like negative thinking about karma. Anybody remember any of them? So one really important one that has helped me a lot is, I was trying to explain to Geshe-la years ago about how, when I was trying to explain karma to Westerners, how it's very easy to get into kind of a blame the victim thing with karma, and how that's totally not the point. And I would tell him, well, people feel like then if something bad has happened to them, that then this idea of karma is that they then deserved it. And I loved his answer. He was like, they deserve enlightenment. You know, that's what they deserve. You know, karma, I have this little bumper sticker on my refrigerator. It looks just like one of those Visa cards where it used to say Visa is everywhere, except it says karma is everywhere. and it's true. So every single thing we're doing, we're always creating karma, whether it's positive, negative, or neutral. It's just the way we think about it that can sometimes get us twisted up. So that rule of thumb is to always remember then, I deserve enlightenment. So if you start getting into this kind of negative thinking, just remind yourself, that's the point, is I deserve enlightenment, and the point is to get there. And the idea of karma is meant to empower us. It's not meant to hobble us or disable us. It's meant to empower us. So that's the other one. The idea of karma is meant to empower you. I don't know if I had any others up there. Am I wearing this right, Brian? Okay, it just feels weird. Okay, so those are the two main. And then a third one is karma is basically the law of cause and effect. And so that's pretty much everywhere. So remember last time I'd asked you to think about how you found out about the center, right? The point behind that is it didn't just happen. It could have been an accident. You walked in here to see some book or something, and all of a sudden you found out about the class. Okay, but that's still not just... something happened to trigger you coming into this building. Everything has a cause, whether we can see it or not. And again, that idea is not meant to disable you. It's meant to empower you. So everything that you want, this is the better way to think about karma too. If you want enlightenment, there has to be a cause for it. It's not like rolling down a hill where it just happens to you. It's going to be something, you have to create the causes for whatever it is that you want. We know this on a very mundane level. So you wanted to get a job. You had to look, well when I was younger, you had to look in the paper. You had to make a phone call. You had to get an interview, right? You didn't just do nothing and get a job. Something might have come to you. Somebody might have said, hey, you look like you'd be great for this commercial, you know. But still, something had to come together. There had to be a cause for the result. And it's a really fun meditation to do. So the way that I found the center years ago when we were in the basement was I was sponsoring an international student at NC State. I used to live close to this campus, and I thought it'd be fun to just help a student who was here and didn't have their family here. So I had two students, one from India and one from China. And the Chinese student, I was telling him how much I wanted to learn to meditate. And he was determined to help me by finding a place that had meditation. And he heard about this Vietnamese temple outside of Raleigh, so he took me there. And it was great, except I didn't speak Vietnamese and they didn't speak much English, so they told me about the Kanapa Center at that time. And so then the rest is history, and here I am. But if I really think about it, so you could say the cause was I was interested in learning about meditation, right? That would be my answer to the question I asked you all. How did you find out about the center? Oh, well, I was interested in learning about meditation. I knew this Chinese guy and blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's true. But you could also walk it back a little bit and say, okay, but it was totally dependent on this Chinese guy and me being friends. So, you know, that means that he had to get this grant from his country to come to the United States to study. Also, NC State had to exist. There had to be a land grant that created the college and somebody who founded it and all these people who created NC State. We could go down that trail, and that would be a long trail. We could also go down the trail of him coming to this country, you know, all the things that worked in the favor of him getting here. And he had a long story about that. And also, well, there was that Vietnamese place that referred us, you know, and so those people had to emigrate here and create this temple outside of Raleigh, and all the training that, because they had a lot of monks there, all of their training, and all of these just interconnectedness, and so you can't really ever find the beginning of that. And when you really do a deep meditation on it, it starts to kind of blow your mind, like all these things came together perfectly for that one thing to then happen, which was me connecting with the Kanapa Center. And so you can't really ever find that beginning piece to it, which is helpful to also help you break away from a negative way of thinking of karma. It's all these interconnections that then result in something. And so the whole point is now, what do you want to create? You know, I wanted to learn meditation. If it wasn't for that intention, it didn't matter that my friend was at NC State or that the Vietnamese temple existed or that the Kanapa Center existed. None of those things would have all come together for me meeting them without that intention. So karma can also be, remember last week I told you that karma means action, which it does. But action is also very closely related to intention. So I could have, you know, without the intention to do any of those things, even if somebody brought me to the Kanapa Center, it would have meant nothing to me. So now, when we have a strong intention to become smarter, become more compassionate, to become enlightened, to develop bodhicitta, when we have this as our intention, then we are already setting something in motion, whether we can see it or not. The hard thing is sometimes we can't see that bigger picture. We're so focused on our life, our hour, our day, that hour I lost. I'm still focused on that hour I lost. And, you know, it's hard to see past this life, but that's what we're being asked to do, is we are putting things in motion that we may not necessarily see ripen in this lifetime. But if we study karma and we see that there is a cause and effect, that there's nothing that you don't create a cause and there be no effect. It just may be that it doesn't ripen immediately or in this life. So we'll get to all of that. I asked Brian to cue up these two clips that I'm going to show you. They're relatively short. The first one is with Jingpa. I can't remember his last name. But he is, okay.
It might be a little bit loud when they first start playing.
Okay. So it might be loud in the beginning. So let me just explain two of them. Jingpa Thubten, I think is his last name, is the translator for His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and he studied forever. He was a monk as well for quite a long time. And the clip is kind of, the photography is not the best. It looks like it was done on someone's cell phone, actually. But just listen to what he's saying, because somebody's asking him a question about karma, and he also repeats the question in Tibetan first. So then just after that, it'll all be English. And the second clip is of Venerable Amy answering or talking about karma as well. So pay attention to what they're saying and think of any questions you have. We'll talk about it afterwards.
Can we improve it?
The reason we, oh yeah, I'm on. For those of you who haven't seen all this, It's because there's people watching on the videos. We're not being surveilled. Well, we are being surveilled, but consciously. So what do you think about anything that was said there? Any questions? Yeah. And so we're going to, there's somebody behind you and then you, and we're going to pass you a microphone so people at home can hear. And if you don't, you know, I can repeat the question too if you're very shy.
So I'm not sure exactly how to say this. I find myself struggling a little bit with karma and the idea of punishment, and I know that's not how you're supposed to think about it.
Right.
But I was wondering, with the cancer example and the rainfall, you know, the leak on your head and everything, when something bad happens, does it always have to be because of our karma from the past? I mean, because bad things, I don't know, bad things happen to everyone all the time. And I love the idea of, you know, choosing how you're going to react to something that could be bad happening to you.
Right.
And that producing further karma, I guess, you know, future.
Right.
But I guess where I'm getting hung up on is the idea of those things being punishment. Or because of our past karma. Like, you know, cancer, who knows what causes cancer? Couldn't it be, I guess, the karma of all of us and, you know, what are we doing to the environment? Is that causing cancer? Anyway.
Because there's certainly karma too. And nobody I know of sitting on the cord. Okay. Nobody, so here's a good example. I mean, there was something I was doing wrong with this. You know, I was sitting on the antenna. and then it's up to us whether we see that wobbly sound as punishment or not. You know, nobody I know who teaches it and nothing that they said uses that word, right? They're going to use the word result and that, I love when Jingpa is saying in the beginning that that's not the point. The point is not really to look back and go, what did, and we always think, what did I do? But it's more like, you know, okay, what did I do in the past that's ripening in this negative way? That's really not very helpful to us. That's what it really is meant to do is to help keep our mind looking forward and planting the seeds that we want to plant now. And so he said it's all about ethical behavior. The whole idea of karma is to develop that kind of ethical behavior and also to give us compassion for all the other beings who are all suffering, all these things that we're also suffering, right, or things even worse than we've ever experienced. And not to look at those circumstances and see, oh, that's punishment for something that they did. But it takes a while to get to that place. But if keeping in mind that the whole point is to look forward with what can I do. And so when something negative arises in our lives, well, of course, because this is where we are. It's going to happen. You know, I've heard lots of teachers say that when they're saying, oh, people have some asked, look at this natural disaster. Why did this happen? And look at this terrible thing. And really the answer is yes, because that's where we are. We're in samsara. It doesn't help anybody to start talking about, well, you know, I'm from New Orleans. Oh, look at the punishment New Orleans got. You know, such bad things happen in New Orleans. And look, Katrina hit New Orleans. I mean, that doesn't help anybody. What does help is to think, what can I do? What can I do to help all these people? Because we're all in the same boat. I'm trying to think of another way. So this used to trip me up a lot, too. So I have a lot of sympathy for this question. And, you know, when Geshe-la told me something about the amount of karma that each of us has created is more than all the sands and all the beaches in the whole world. And this life is just like one little handful of that sand. You know, it's just, this is the scoop that you got this lifetime. And it's not, you know, so next lifetime you're going to have a different scoop until you don't have to have any more scoops because you're just way above that beach, right? So every lifetime is going to have some scoop that's got some really wonderful sand in it and really some difficult sand in it. And the more that we can clean up our actions now so that they're as positive as possible, the better that sand will be each lifetime until we really don't have to come back and be all walking on that beach. But in the meantime, being on Earth means you've got that handful of sand that you've got, and everybody does too. And so for some people it's going to, I mean, we're all, none of us is going to live forever, so we're all going to die of something. Something is going to, because that's also in our karmic package. Illness and death, right? So something has to ripen to take us out. And judging what takes one person out versus another is going to do nothing but create negative karma. Really negative karma. but I want to keep coming back to that question. So he had a question, and then over to you. Yeah.
Okay, this is just kind of a little technical question, but it's just something I'm not sure of. So let's just say that I get angry at someone, say ugly words to them, and then that makes them angry. And they get really angry. Then, you know, the anger grows. But let's say that I get angry at Jane, and Jane doesn't get angry because she's, you know, she's smart enough to say, well, you know, like Venerable Amy did, and she doesn't get angry. Is my anger, is that better for me because my anger didn't spread, or is it worse for me if my anger spreads? You know, because I think of it like a tree.
Right, right. Well, in some ways, you're right. I mean, it is better for you because now it hasn't escalated to where now you're going to do something even worse, right?
So my karma is affected. It's just not my intention. It's affected by the person my actions are directed at. They can help my, they affect my personal karma.
Well, in that way that we're all interrelated, those ripple effects, but you've still created negative seeds by saying and thinking those thoughts, you know. So that's done, but it hasn't escalated. So her interacting with you has, you could say, de-escalated it and helped.
Okay. Yeah. All right, I wasn't sure if it was my action just, was my action period, or other people could affect my action, making it better for me.
Right, yeah, and we're going to come back to that too. But yeah, so you could also say, well, you have the good fortune to be saying those things to her who didn't escalate them versus somebody else who might have, you know,
Okay. So I was in another karma class, a different teacher, and the topic, this discussion went on about how to relate to these bad things that happen to you. And I've never thought of it this way. It's this relief that it was only this bad. In other words, so if you have a toothache and you have to have a filling, well, it wasn't an abscess. Mm-hmm. And if it's this kind of event or that kind of event, it can always be worse if you survive it. So there's this relief that I have purified some event, some karmic seed I planted long ago, and if it ripened into a toothache that, you know, that didn't result in losing the tooth, then I've gotten rid of that burden. And so it's almost like welcoming these minor bad things when they come along, because they're going to come along. It's just like, oh, cool.
Right.
That's purified, whatever it was.
Right. It's so much of Buddhism is mind training. It's the science of training our mind. So training our mind how to react to the things that are absolutely going to arise in our life. And if we practice with the smaller ones, like a minor headache, and how to view that, then it's going to be a little bit easier when it's something more difficult. So now is the time to practice with the things that we feel like are capable of practicing with. And I think, Tristan, you and I talked last week about, you know, how to view those difficulties that arise. So absolutely, if we can start seeing them like, okay, phew, okay, this, I've finished this one now. You know, I don't have to make this worse. I don't have to, or I caught myself thinking this really negative thing. Now I can stop that, you know. Or, okay, this difficult situation has arisen. What are my choices and how I'm going to view this? So I love reading books about, like, survival and people in really difficult situations, just, you know, like locked up abroad and I shouldn't be alive, those kind of TV shows. I love those. And so I was reading this book about this plane crash and all these different people who had been burned. They all survived, and the different ways that they approached, like, their hospitalization and their trauma. And this one guy, he was just, like, amazing, because when he was being rescued and put in the ambulance, he knew, like, whatever percentage of your body is burned, that you're not going to be able to really live past so ever many weeks. So he could kind of look and judge. So he was telling these medics, no, go take care of this person and this person. It's okay. And he, even in the plane, when the plane was going down, he was pretty calm, because he was like, you know, I don't know what his spiritual beliefs were, but he was like, we all have to die, and so, okay, this is one way to go. I don't know. It was pretty phenomenal. So then even in the whole rehab process where he knew he was going to die, he was such an inspiration to the doctors and to the staff, and he wasn't faking it. You know, for some reason, he just had this really evolved way of looking at things, because something he said in the book, something about, you know, he really understood the reality of death. It wasn't a shock to him that death, you know, he wasn't an older man either, but he was just really aware that death is very possible all the time. So he had studied that in his own way. So it wasn't this really just awful thing for him. The doctors were so impressed with him, all the other people were, that after he died, they named a whole section of that burn unit after him. And to me, that's also an incredible example of karma. Right, so that his actions didn't just end right there. People remembered him. They named that whole unit after him because of the way that he had trained his mind to see his extreme difficulty and death. You know, so we're talking about the different ways to view. He could have totally viewed it as punishment. Like, why me? What in the world did I do to deserve this plane crash? I'm only whatever, how old he was, 30, and now I'm going to die. And, you know, but he had already been thinking a lot about it, so he was able to, not that he wasn't sad, not that he didn't have feelings, but that he was able to work with those feelings and still pull himself to this view most of the time. So I also think we can't, you know, we are going to get upset. Things are difficult. Life is difficult. Things will feel unfair. And then we can try to balance it with this other way of looking at it. And the other thing to keep in mind that Geshe-la's always pointing out to me is, you know, these habits that we have, we just think of like habits in this life. But when you think about time and the beginninglessness of time, so we have formed really, really strong habits, positive and negative, that are very hard for us to just switch over and see things differently. So we have to practice with every opportunity we have. So you see these things by the door that I guess Jill put in there. So let me go read one to you. Because to me, this is all about that. I talked about the three gates of body, speech, and mind, and intention. So this is something Rinpoche will do all the time because this is now his habit. So when you go out a door, think, I am bringing all sentient beings out of the prison of samsara. Okay, so you're not really doing that when you open the door, but if you're thinking that and you have the intention that as I'm opening this door, which is a physical action, I wish that I would be able to do that. I'd be able to liberate beings, release beings from prison, whatever it is that you want to do, that just that thought creates incredible seeds. And so getting in that habit of trying to create as many positive thoughts and wishes as possible. There's just so many ways to create good karma that we sometimes think we have to do something or, okay, this weekend I'm going to do that. It's just every time you turn around, you can do that. Which book?
The book you were talking about.
I don't know.
This now you were talking with one person.
Oh, I don't know. I just go to the library and pull out any book I can find on people who survive near-death experiences. Something about a plane crash. I'll see if I can remember it. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
A couple of points. On the first video, the thought of accepting your karma and thinking that if you cleanse that karma is a liberating idea. And Venerable Amy's idea of you have the control of how you want to react to someone lying to you or someone being angry with you. And if I may speak to the concept of punishment, some of the worst things that have ever happened in my life, little did I know at the time, were some of the best things that ever happened to me.
Right.
As time went on, they were just amazing experiences that taught me, mm-hmm. I grew, mm-hmm. and at the time, it was incredibly horrible, punishment, whatever you wanted to call it, but you don't see that at the time.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah.
So the action from the karma is coming from a misperception of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
Or who we are not. Let's say we are thinking that we are something, no? But if we are not something, we are not creating karma. Mm. So we, I am trying to go to this idea of the emptiness where mm-hmm. the, mm-hmm. we don't have an inherent existence.
Mm-hmm.
So, see, our problems are for the ignorance to believe mm-hmm. that we are something, no? So, if we are not something, we are not creating karma, because something could not create anything because it's something, it's not something, no?
Yeah, it gets really complicated. So, and the next class is emptiness, but the next module is emptiness. So we are something, but we're not the something that we think we are. You know, we think that we exist in a certain kind of way, and it's because of that ignorant way of the way that we view ourselves that propels our whole life. And so we will talk about the wheel of life, which is what you're touching on. You know, there's a certain way of, that we ignorantly view ourselves and our circumstances and our life that creates the cause, creates the way that we act, which creates more karma, which creates this whole cycle that we're stuck on called samsara. And if we can have that view of emptiness, which means, you know, that we still exist, it's just that we don't exist in this concrete way that we're thinking or in this inherently existent way that we're thinking, it does, but it's not, you know, so have you read how, you know, if you're looking at emptiness, you're kind of straddling these two ways of viewing things, either things exist solidly and inherently or that they don't exist at all. So we don't want to fall into that nihilistic thinking of we're nothing or we're this inherently existent self. And it's really hard to get right in the middle of that. But when we are able to really realize emptiness, yeah, then we have broken that chain, that cycle that we're on, and we're no longer, we can get beyond creating karma. We are beyond creating karmic seeds that bring us back to lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Am I touching on what you're talking about? And if you get this book in the bookstore, The Meaning of Life, it does have the 12 links in the whole wheel of life, which we will talk about. If anybody's interested, it's really interesting. And it talks about just how we create this whole cause for being in this life, and then we can undo this. We can break through that and not repeat this over and over and over again. Okay, yeah, here and then here.
And could you elaborate on the how karma is misused to perpetuate injustices?
Mm-hmm.
Like situations, the thing that comes to mind is like situations of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You know that?
Right.
I mean, you could think, if you are the one that is being abused or enslaved or something, I mean, you certainly in the past created the causes for you to be right now on that circumstance. But then, I mean, there has to be, I mean, when someone looks at it from outside, then mm-hmm. it's like, oh no, you know, you have to, I don't know, leave your husband or your wife mm-hmm. or, you know, that it's abusing you. But then, I mean, how do you go
okay.
with that, with karma, about that with karma?
So I think what Jingpa was saying is that the way that it perpetuates the injustice is if I'm looking from the outside and saying, oh, that's her fault, she's created the causes to be in that situation, what have I done except make it worse for my own self, but also for this situation? I've done nothing to help, right? The whole point is to think about also what can I do? How can I be helpful, even if it's just more compassionate thinking?
Yeah, but for the person that is being abused,
okay.
how... Because, I mean, if you are introduced to that concept of karma and then you're mm-hmm. being abused, I mean, how
okay.
can you
okay.
not use that concept to stay...
Right. Okay. So, we're going to get to this too because...
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh no, I deserve this, you know, okay. Because I created the causes and conditions.
Okay, so we're going to all tattoo on ourselves, I deserve enlightenment.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
I deserve enlightenment. I deserve liberation. I deserve liberation from this abuse, you know. And so also think about, I think the Tibetans fighting for their freedom is a perfect example. It doesn't mean just like, of course, looking at it from a karmic position, it doesn't happen in a vacuum.
Right.
Okay, the Tibetan situation doesn't happen in a vacuum. So thinking of karma, then they are working for their independence skillfully. Without
more suffering. Okay.
Like watch
more
the way,
violence.
Watch the way His Holiness talks about the situation with China. He's not saying let's take up arms, you know.
Right.
He's really skillfully looking at, you still have to say something. You still have to call out abuse for what it is.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And still try to, actually, it's a really powerful way to affect other people's minds when you are so thoughtful about the way that you're calling out abuse or suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's, you know, look at Gandhi, for example. So he was always trying to figure out a way to change minds. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But so anyway, the whole point then, if you're looking at karma from this, like what Jinpa was saying, from this ethical point of view, then you're trying to use your actions so that it's not creating more harm for yourself and others.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then something I was reading, this woman was saying, when she was studying Buddhism, this class was talking about, like, say, scientists who are really doing these really harmful, this is especially a long time ago, harmful experiments on these animals. You know, the animals didn't have anesthesia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And these students were new to it, and they were kind of like gleefully saying, yeah, but those vets are going to have to now experience what those animals experience. And the teacher leaned forward and said, and will you have compassion for them then?
Mm-hmm.
Because the students had so much compassion for the animals.
Mm-hmm.
And now they were kind of like, yeah, and those vets are going to have to suffer that one day. And he was saying, you're missing the whole point. When they're animals suffering like that, will you have compassion for them? So now, can you have compassion for both?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have compassion for these animals now, and you feel like these guys are soon going to be in that position, then you should have compassion for them too.
Mm-hmm.
And so the compassion just kind of expands. But it doesn't mean that you don't do something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that you don't do something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have a question, and it's more of a question if I'm getting this right, because I am struggling with the thing about, for example, with the cancer, that it was an effect of my karma from my past life. So for me, the way that I am getting enlightenment is to know the causes for the situation, the bad situation that is happening to me, and then looking forward to not stay the same and to be better.
Mm-hmm.
But if in this case I say that this is the karma from my past life, and I don't know what I did in my past life, how do I get to that point? For me, it's like not understanding if I say, oh, it's because of my karma from other lives. For me, it's not understanding how to be better, how to not repeat that mistake and move forward.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is that the main part of your question? Like, if you have something bad happens and you don't know what it was that caused it, you don't know what to do to prevent it in the future?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, if you can't, if you know of, I mean, there's like 10 things I want to say. So you're right, like, you know, I've had some terrible things happen to me, just horrendous things happen to me. I have no idea what set those in motion, right? And I don't think I really need to know. What I need to know is, what am I doing in this lifetime? And in this lifetime, I can't think of anything, you know, super horrendous that I've done. I do have the chance in this lifetime to try to purify what I call, like, my river of consciousness, you know, so if... I have the ability now to do certain practices to, since I'm the keeper of my consciousness in this lifetime named Steep, right? I have the ability to do certain practices that clean up things that I've done in this lifetime and things I have no idea about. So imagine that you're a river. You're a huge, long river. And this little tiny bit of it is, what's your name?
Carolina.
Carolina? So there's one little curve in the river. That's all you're seeing. And that little curve in the river is called Carolina. But it's actually, this river is, you can't even find the beginning and you can't find the end. So you don't know, you're just seeing things come down the river. You could kind of waste a lot of time trying to figure out how did this pollution get in the river and how did these logs get in the river. But you can do something right now to make sure that they don't move forward. And the whole point is not to blame, you know, when I say this prayer in the morning, it's a wonderful prayer because it's meant for everybody to say, and I'm confessing for all these things that I've done that I didn't do in this lifetime. But I can assume that at some point I did, right? At some point, we've all done incredible bad and good things. And so now in this lifetime with this pocket full of, this handful of sand, you're going to find all kinds of mixes. We've all created the causes to have a human lifetime in a country where we're able to sit here and talk about these things. But because we're humans, we're also going to have all these other things happen. We're all going to get sick and die at some point or have a plane crash. I don't think I'm getting close to your question though, am I? So, you don't know what to do to create the causes for something.
No, I mean, I would like to know. I mean, it's a crazy question. What did I do in past life? For me, that thing of past life and rebirth, it's very, very hard to understand.
Yeah.
Because for me, it's knowing the cause, because that's been how I've learned the most in my life. Bad thing happens, and if I think, oh, okay, I have this and that's why get me to this point, then don't do that again.
Okay.
So you don't get there. So that's my struggle.
Well, I would say that, you know, last week we talked about the 10 non-virtues. And if you can do the 10 virtues and eliminate as many of the 10 non-virtues as possible, and we'll go over them again, then you can be pretty much assured that you're just planting positive seeds. If you're going to try to figure out all the things in past lifetimes that you did, I think there's a reason why we don't remember them. It's probably that we'd just go insane if we remembered all our lives, right? Until we're enlightened. It would just drive us crazy. So if we know that, okay, in this lifetime I'm doing as many of the positive actions as I can, then that's huge, because the point is not to be bound up by fear that, oh my goodness, what am I doing for my next lifetime? You have the opportunity to build on incredible wealth. It's all like we all hit the lottery, really. We all hit the lottery. And so now you have the ability to invest that money in something even better. That's the whole point of thinking of karma. Yes, you hit the lottery, and so because you're a lottery winner, you still have to pay taxes, you know. So that's like all the illnesses we're going to get. We still have to pay taxes. But we have this incredible ability to invest that money for our future. I'll try to keep hitting on that, Tristan.
So this question is about dreaming and where karma enters dreams and how dreams affect our karma while we're awake. So in other words, if I have a dream and in my dream I'm doing like something evil or something like that, would a Buddhist belief be that that would influence my waking state? Like, in other words, I'm asking the connection between being dreaming and not dreaming, and how all the states that we experience, how karma is in all of them, right?
Yeah.
Isn't it all about volition? It's all intent.
It is, and I've heard Geshe-la talk about that's a very different mind. The dreaming mind is different from the waking mind. So the kind of karmic seeds that you're creating are much different than in the waking mind with full consciousness and action. And I'm going to talk about this in a second, about what are the ways that a whole karmic act is complete. But also you'll notice that if you have, your dreams can be influenced by very positive things that you're doing all day as well. I've also read in different texts that sometimes when you have really bad dreams, you can see that as a purification. So these terrible things are happening to you in a dream, it could be like, good, I burned those up in a dream. I got rid of those in a dream. You know?
Yeah, I was just curious because I feel that it's like important to be mindful of your dreams and not, you know, mm-hmm. I've made a point of trying to remember my dreams recently, mm-hmm. and in doing so I get to see, I guess, all the sorts of different dreams that I have, and I guess learning more about karma makes me wonder, you know, with each dream and with each, you know, mm-hmm. oh, that was a good dream, that was a bad dream, or this mm-hmm. happened and that other thing happened and it was mm-hmm. all crazy, but instead of just analyzing it and trying to kind of take the moral of the story of the dream
mm-hmm.
the same way I would take the moral of the story while I'm awake and I, you know, get a flat tire and saying, mm-hmm. oh, well, maybe it's because I cussed out that lady when she messed up my hamburger
mm-hmm.
or something like that. I don't know.
So, yeah, so just keep in mind, too, like in the text they talk a lot about if you're doing your retreat and you're doing all these mantras, then you'll see certain signs in your dreams. You know, you'll dream of flying or all these different things. But also that the dream, the mind and the dream is very different, so you're not creating the exact same kind of karmic seeds. And, you know, sometimes karma ripens immediately and sometimes it doesn't. So we can all have examples of, you know, if you've been working really hard on... Well, just like Venerable Amy was talking about, say if you've been working really hard to change the way you relate to somebody at work or to be much more mindful when you're driving, you will often see immediate results, right? You know, it just feels like the atmosphere completely changed after you've been working on something a long time because you're no longer getting hooked on it. So just like, say, you've been harping on Jane for weeks and weeks and she's been working on her mind, and so this time she didn't react to you and everything changed. Everything changed because she was working on her mind. And then this affected you because you saw, wow, this didn't escalate. I'm going to try that. So in those kinds of ways, we can see karma ripen immediately like that. And that's kind of the point. That's where to keep our focus. So before we end, I'm supposed to cover certain points. And the other thing to remember is, you know, we all have Buddha nature. That's the point. We all have this potential to become completely enlightened, but we need the cause. You know, we don't have all the causes in our little mind stream yet. So we have this little part of the river we're responsible for now, and we are so lucky because we're aware that there's things that we can put in that river that will ripen into complete enlightenment, complete liberation for ourselves. No more suffering, no more cancer or colds or flat tires. So that's the whole point of it, not to berate ourselves with what happened, why did this happen. Something happened in the past because of anger, ignorance, right? Anger, ignorance, jealousy. We created the things that are ripening now through these negative tendencies that we all have. We all share that. It's not like one of us, you know, we all have a little bit different twist on it, but we all have those three poisons in our habits. We're working with those all the time, right? So that's those things that you've created in the past out of those actions of ignorance or anger or attachment. And, just like when you go to the movie, it's just 2 hours, and look at all the things that happen in 2 hours on the movie screen, right? Just imagine our whole lifetimes with all the drama that we've created that ripen in more drama now. So now as they ripen, we're like, oh, I have the ability now to do something different with this thing that's ripening, this illness, this headache, this flat tire. And as we create those causes, then we will become enlightened at some point. So there are four general rules by which karma functions. We'll talk more about this next week. Oh, I have a little bit of time. And these are, karma is definite. Okay, so if our intention is positive, our action will be correspondingly positive and create more positive karmic imprints or predispositions for the future. And also in its wake, we'll be creating happiness around us. If our intention is not positive, then we're creating more negativity. So that really is what it comes down to. You know, if it could be just an act of opening the door. You could open the door neutrally and just walk through it. No big deal. You've created neutral karma. You could open the door thinking those thoughts that are on that little sticker right next to the door. Now you've just created an incredible positive karma. You could open the door angry that you had to wait for five people to get in front of you, and now you've just put some negative stuff in your mind stream. So, and what she's saying, what this is saying is that these are definite. You don't do something with negative intention and create positive karma. You know, it's negative is negative and positive is positive. And the positive ripen in your happiness and the negative ripen in some kind of problem. And they can be purified, which is, we're also going to talk about that. It's huge good news. Karma is definite. Not only is the karmic result inescapable in nature and quality, the karmic imprints we create on our mind stream will grow and produce results that are greater than their cause. So if we don't clean something up and purify our karmic seeds, then it's like one of those little, you know, those little sponge things that you buy in the museum, this little tiny capsule, and you put it in water and it turns into like this big dinosaur. It's like that. It just keeps growing, which is good news for the positive imprints and bad news for the negative ones. So that's what it means, dynamic. It's always changing, which is really good news because that means you can affect it. It's not just, you can affect it. Karma is specific. We cannot experience any result for which we have not created the cause. This also means that we cannot take on the karma of other people. Even Buddha couldn't do this. Even Buddha couldn't do this. Otherwise, Buddha would just always come here and just grant enlightenment. Why not? Right? But we have this way, just like you all were talking about, we have this way of reacting and relating to each other. So, Tristan, when you become enlightened, and there's things that you can do that will make me go, oh, right, I need to pay attention to my dreams. And then maybe in my dream something will happen. You know, it was that kind of interdependence. So a Buddha can't just wipe away all of your negativity and grant you enlightenment. But by relating to a Buddha, you can follow that path and become enlightened. Does that make sense? So we're relating and learning and affecting each other all the time. But no one can just take away your karma. Does that make sense? Can't just take it away. You're going to have to do the work. So it's just like, you know, there's lots of examples. Like, I can give you a cookbook. That doesn't mean that food is going to materialize on your plate until you go and buy the ingredients and start cooking. So, but when you become enlightened, you can write that cookbook and give it to me. And in that way, if I do the work, then I'll have the meal. Karma is dormant. Karmic imprints are never lost, but can only come to fruition if we create the right causes and conditions for them to ripen. So sometimes, you know, I think even the Bible has some story about, you know, a mustard seed or something. I didn't grow up in any church, but I think there's something about a seed that's not on the right dirt, and so it doesn't grow into something until the right conditions reach it. Same is true. So you never know. Like, we focus a lot on our negative karma, but my goodness, we must have done something incredible to have the situations that we have in this lifetime. And so you don't know last time how much work you must have done. And so some of those positive dormant seeds that you have from your past too only need a couple drops of water, and they manifest in very positive ways. And so that's also something in your control. So producing karma in this uncontrolled, unaware manner. Yeah, so when we're producing karma in an unknowing way, in an uncontrolled way, it's just kind of a spiral of unhappiness. But once we become more mindful of the ethical possibilities that we have and the way to think more about our actions, heavy karmic stuff starts to fall out. We can start to clean up so much. So just like creating karma, we can do very quickly. You know, I think in one of the classes, maybe somebody was talking to you about, there's ways, again, to use your mind when you're cleaning something, to be thinking like, I am not just cleaning this table, I'm cleaning away all my negative actions from the past. That's purification. Because the way that, what's going to become enlightened is your body, speech, and mind. It's not something over there that's going to be enlightened. It's something right here. Your body, speech, and mind are going to be enlightened. So the things that you do now with your body, speech, and mind are the things that are creating the seeds for your future enlightenment. That's why certain practices like walking around the stupa or turning the prayer wheels, if you're doing them with your mind too, you're doing them with your three gates of body, speech, and mind, and they have huge potential then to create positive imprints for your river. Karma really can, I've heard people talk about this. Karma is best understood and can only really properly be understood in the context of rebirth. Since beginningless time, we have gone through a cycle of uncontrolled death and rebirth, determined by the cause we produce through our actions. We're propelled into various realms of existence. Sometimes it's easier just to think about this life, but it also helps if you're able to see this bigger river, then certain things make sense. And the whole point is that we start taking responsibility instead of blaming somebody else or that kind of why me or that feeling of punishment. So I think other people of other faiths struggle with that feeling of punishment too. So if you believe in a creator, then why was this cancer created? You know, what did I do that this creator is giving me these problems? When you think of it in terms of karma, then it's that, well, anybody who has a mind stream is going to be experiencing some of these things. This is my share right now from whatever is coming down river, and I can do something right now to change the way that I'm managing it. Okay, and I wrote little notes that I cannot read because I wrote them in yellow. But the main point is about training ourselves to be virtuous. Even if we're doing it, this is what they're saying. Even if we're doing it in a mechanical way in the beginning, this one person was asking this question, like, isn't kind of spontaneous virtue much better than this kind of thought out, conscious, I'm going to do this. And the answer was, well, yeah, but how often does that happen? How often is it just kind of overwhelmed with this virtuous deed? They're all virtuous. So training yourself to do something virtuous is not a bad thing to do, because then it does become second nature. And then it just kind of grows to where there are these more spontaneous events as well. So I remember somebody asking His Holiness about compassion and generosity. And he said, okay, in the beginning, just practice your right hand giving to your left hand. Your left hand giving to your right hand, you know, then giving to your best friend. And then, you know, you just keep practicing so that it does start to become a habit and a good habit, something you can catch and watch. All right. I'm exhausted from talking. I appreciate all your patience in listening to this. Here's the homework. Hopefully you're reading. I'm going to talk about some of the stuff in the book next week. So we've been talking about how karma is dynamic. And I think a lot of that's also the way that I described how I came to the center, and that kind of interdependent, related way you can see how karma is always kind of moving. It's not something that's just stagnant. And you can do things with it. Play around with that idea this week and see if you can experience something in your own life where you have a different experience because of the way that you now are thinking about something, whether you're standing in a long line somewhere or you're in traffic, you know, anything that usually kind of tests you a little bit. See if you go into it knowing, oh, today I'm going to practice this. I'm going to practice entering this situation with a completely different mindset, and I'm going to see what happens. I'm just going to see what arises as a result of that. It may take longer than a week, but try something manageable and see how it goes. And then come back with your answers. So, like I've told some of you this story before, I was waiting for this is years and years ago, I was waiting in the Newark airport for my mother, and I don't like crowds, and, you know, all this big crowd at the airport, and it was hot, and every person that came off the plane, I was like, that's not my mom, I was getting angry or getting annoyed, right? And then I thought, oh, wait a minute, this is when I'm supposed to do something different. So I said, what if I saw every single person, instead of like, that's not my mom, what if I thought, oh, that could be my mom, or if this person, that could be my favorite uncle, or, you know, when you really, really love somebody, every little thing on them looks so cute, right? So that's what I started to do, like, instead of judging people, like, oh, ugh, that's not my mom, I was like, oh, what if that was my grandma, that would look so cute, and every person started to look so cute. And I was just like getting happier and happier. And by the time my mom came out, it was just, I was like, I was in a bubble of joy. I couldn't believe I was in the same airport. It would be one of those things in a movie, like the music would come on and the whole room would turn orange, you know. So that was just all coming from here, but it was instant result. I created the cause for that experience. You are the creator of your next moment of happiness. That's the whole point. That's what to focus on. So see if you can have some experience with being the creator of your next moment of happiness this week, and then bring it in to share, okay? And then we'll make a movie. Yeah.
Good question. There are several meditations that we're supposed to be doing.
I know. And I'm supposed to be helping you with those. Yeah. Do you know which one they're supposed to be meditating on this week?
I put online that the meditation for this past week was the one that we did at the end of class last time, of meditating on the non-virtues and then,
okay,
you know, choose something and then change it.
Mm-hmm.
I left them blank because
okay,
the teachers typically come up with something, but...
Okay, so here's what I want you to meditate on. You can take it, whether it's the how you found the center, and do that meditation that I did of like going back into all the different causes that brought it together. It doesn't have to be the center. It could be anything in your life that you want to do that with. So do that meditation a couple of times, and also a review meditation of the 10 non-virtues and the 10 virtues. So, and then that homework of trying to have a wow experience somewhere. Okay? And see if it changes when you're doing that, if it changes the feeling, about this kind of ugh feeling about karma from the past. Because I don't know any meditations that really focus on like, okay, let's meditate on really something difficult from the past. It's mostly all about let's meditate on what we can do. So, take notes on how you're thinking and feeling about karma. All right, so take a minute to congratulate yourself on thinking about this topic and coming here on a Monday night when it's raining and you lost an hour's sleep and you put in a good chunk of time. So that effort is not lost. You just created incredible... you just did something that's that effective that it's not going to be lost. So now take a minute to think about where you would like these karmic seeds to ripen, how you would like them to ripen in your life, so that you have more wisdom and understanding about what to do, how to view things, how to act, how to get closer to your enlightenment, reduce all the obstacles in your way, that you'll have no more suffering, to be completely enlightened and benefit all those around you. And that all of your actions between now and your complete enlightenment help others, whether you know it or not. Okay, and then what page is Shanti Devi's prayer on?
246.
246. As you're saying this prayer, you know, these are like the best of the best wishes that you can think. So I remember at the beginning when I first heard this, I was like, wow, this is kind of unrealistic. That's not the point. It's you're saying, may all this happen. And just by wishing this, again, you're just like gold right in your river. Okay. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then, may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Thank you.